This is BFBS, the Forces Station.
Patch and Gear. Meet Matt Goss.
BFBS,
the Forces Station.
This is Hatch and Gear, and we are all across the Forces world. And thank God this is radio, because our next guest is so good looking you can get a cataract just by looking in his general direction. Don't look very soon.
Matt Goss is on the move again after more than 11 years in a Las Vegas residency. Matt's finally coming home to start a new life in London, which is where, of course, it all started. Bross, the pop band, if you don't know, consisted of Matt, his brother Luke, and their friend Craig Logan. Together, Bross Mania swept the world, and they sold more than 16 million records. The Beautiful Unknown is the name of Matt's new record, and we're thrilled to say he's on the line now. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, lovelies. How are you?
We are good.
It's nice to see you in bed.
I'm in bed. I apologise about my voice as well. So
it's extra sexy, don't
worry. It's sexy. I might phone mine down a few octaves as well. I don't want to be out sexed. Do you know what I mean?
It's be annoying.
Out sexed.
Yeah.
Last night I just finished directing the second video for the album, And it's we finished at around 5, got back here about 6. But because it's you guys, I'm still in bed. And you said you don't mind. You actually said you were slightly aroused. So
that's me and Jason Derulo. We're always slightly aroused. Let's be fair. So tell us about life in Vegas. You've been there 11 years. Why did you first go out, Matt?
I went to Vegas really because I've been touring the world, really all over the world, and it got to the point where I wanted to be in a place where I've always wanted to play Vegas, but I actually wanted to go to a place where I could learn a different side of my trade and actually learn to communicate with an audience that wasn't necessarily fans of mine. And people say Vegas teaches you so much, and I learned more in Vegas than any place I've ever learned, because you go on there, on stage, and you know, 2/3 of the audience are fans, but 1/3 of the audience have read a review. You know, there's so much selection of shows and choice, and you know, you have to burn your ego at the door when you go and play Vegas, because you just have to accept you're there to entertain. But it got to the point where it got very, very difficult for me, because I lost my mother in the middle of it, and I was on 120 planes a year. And at that moment, I was in Los Angeles traveling backwards and forwards. And also, I said to my stepfather at the time, you're now living with me, because I made a promise to my mum to make sure he was safe. And to be completely candid with you, it was starting to get too much to kind of take everything on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I moved to Las Vegas, where I could drive to the show. I think losing my mum actually made me and my stepfather closer. But it also, the reality was that I was struggling at the time, but then I found a way to continue by moving to Las Vegas. In all, including LA and Vegas, it was 11 years.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
How do you give that up, though? I mean, I saw you on those massive billboards, you know, as I was walking down the strip, and, you know, that is quite an addictive thing to be part of, isn't it? So after 11 years, what made you give it up?
I think that's an amazing observation. It is somewhat addictive, because you feel it's a big privilege to be a headliner in Las Vegas. And I think that was the very thing, what you just said, that I started to feel disconnected to. I felt like, you know, 4 or 5 shows a week, it wasn't feeling as artistic as I needed. My soul needed to feel connected to new music. It needed to feel connected to new, like I did last night, you know, directing a video with 40 people and not, you know, knowing what you were going to actually create, but at least you knew you're creating something that didn't exist the day before. And I learned so much, you know, people that heckle you and you're in a good way, it made me much more sharp and much more composed, Vegas. But I want to get back to Tokyo and Paris and Berlin and London, and I want to see the world again. And the only way to do that was to write a record that I know in my heart, the way I felt when I was part of I Owe You Nothing and When Will I Be Famous. I knew that I had to write songs that were pop records that could make it on the radio and actually be recorded by the industry A-lists, and take pride in that. And that's why I did. I just needed I need to see the world again. And while I'm still a relatively young man and can still actually take it on board.
Well, if you want to go and see the world again, you're going to have to get out of bed soon, I would have said. Now.
Well, listen, you did give me a nudge this morning and asked for 2 sugars. So
right,
I'm halfway there, mate.
We are going to talk about The Beautiful Unknown very soon, but let's just have a little break. Let's have a song that that started it all for you. Tell us about When Will I Be Famous?
It was actually one of those songs when I was recording this song, it was an incredible moment for us, because there's the bridge has kind of a triplet section in the middle, and there was a quite a famous story within the industry that an A&R man at a very big record company had an A&R meeting, and he said, right, I want to play a song to you now. This is how not to write a hit record. And because it had that section in the middle. Anyway, ended up being number one in over 40 countries simultaneously, and also I believe in the UK for 87 weeks. So it was just one of those songs that I love doing different versions of it. The thing with a song like that, you almost know that it's your get out of jail free moment where you know the audience are going to sing back to you. And I still love singing it, and I play it in every show that I do, but whatever incarnation of the song happens, it always lifts the audience.
When will I be famous?
Station.
Hatch and Gear. Meet Matt Goss.
This is Hatch and Gear. We are with the singer Matt Goss. Matt, of course, is generally regarded as the better looking brother of Brosnan. I can say that.
I
can
say you are definitely trying to get me into trouble.
Because Luke's not here. We can say that. Okay. Let's start at the beginning. How did Bros get together?
I'm still laughing. Sorry, mate. You have no idea. You can't say stuff like that. My family, if you saw that movie, you know that it's
exactly. After the screaming
Let
stops.
Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Let's move
all right,
on.
It's gone. we were in many bands. I joined my first band when I was 12 with my brother, because I was actually thought I was going to be an actor. And then I did a show called Cabaret. And within that show, there was a lot of singing, and people said, oh, I really love your voice. And pretty much after the rehearsals for Cabaret, there was an audition to be a singer in a band. And my brother was auditioning, and nobody turned up to be the singer. And I just naturally got the job by default, because nobody else turned up. And so that was our first band. We had all terrible names for bands. We had Epitome. We were Caviar was one of the names. We had no idea what Caviar was.
That wasn't a name. When you say no idea, that wasn't one of the band names.
No, I wish it would have been better than Caviar, but we just thought, we just knew that Caviar was expensive and we couldn't afford it. And then we found out it was Fish Eggs. So we were like, we should probably move on from that name. The last band that we were in before Bros was Summer House, because we actually rehearsed in my friend's dad's summer house by his pool, because he was rich. And we had a Breville toaster, and we'd have cheese sandwiches every day.
You're living the life.
And then we actually then got discovered by Nicky Graham, who produced or was involved with the Pet Shop Boys with Tom Watkins, and was actually in the Spiders of Bars with Bowie. So he actually discovered us, and Ross was born.
That's amazing. What do you remember about your first gig?
It's hard to remember my first gigs, because we were in a lot of dodgy gigs in workingmen's clubs, and we would be like basically paid with an underage beer, and that was it. It was a lot of like, you know, confused middle-aged men that wondered why we were wearing gold lamé suits at the time. And, but it was a brilliant lesson to just how to just keep cracking on and just, you know, not give up. And it wasn't really about the cash; it was about the experience and, you know, not getting stage fright. And it was a good apprenticeship.
For those that don't know, people used to wear Grolsch bottle tops on their
yes, they did.
On their shoes. What was all that about? And why was it Grolsch, well, that lager? Why that lager? It was such a...
Well, okay, I need to say a couple of things here, because I've got a great branding agent in the UK. And one of the things that I said to her, I'm like, why don't we do another beer commercial, and I can actually take the bottle top off my shoe, pick up a pint of like English beer or Newcastle Brown or London Pride, and say, now that's a proper beer.
Yeah, good one.
So I am with you. Why a Grolsch is a good question. But I was just sitting at a photo shoot, and there was some Grolsch on the table. I was bored, and I just pulled the top off like you do on a Grolsch, and it fit perfectly into the holes of my Doc Martens. I went and did the photo shoot, and I never forget, about a week later, we were driving down Kenny High Street, and I just kept seeing people doing the same thing. I'm like, that's incredible. Somebody had the same idea as me at the time. I had no idea anyway. About within 3 months, and I mean every single country in the world, people were putting bottle tops on their shoes.
Crazy. That's nuts.
But that's just indicative of what Brossmania was like. I mean, I was watching your documentary, and was it not a bit frightening at times? Those women running at you, throwing themselves at you.
I think if you saw, I think even if you saw when we came in to London, that was before the shows at the O2. Nothing about my life and my brother's life is in any way normal still. It's still, there's a rebellious kind of side of what we do. And it was definitely pretty nuts at times, because you would never know what you're going into, because we were still learning. And I never forget, we got off a plane in Australia and there were 11,000 people at the airport. And we were just Southeast London boys. We were like, are there going to be anyone that knows who we are in Australia? Because it's on the other side of the world. And then even when we did HMV in London, we still hold the record there. And there were 11,000 people at HMV. And I remember my wonderful press officer at the time, Joe Donnelly at Sony. And she actually put my red jacket on, got into a car to try and divert, so people thought that car was leaving.
Wow.
The police actually got a big van, a meat wagon, and just drove us about 90 miles an hour down Oxford Street. And then as we were driving down, we saw the car door that Joe was in, being carried down Oxford Street. They'd actually ripped the door off. It was always, every day was like that. And it's, I mean, our lives are still pretty nuts. You can see that in the movie. But yeah, it was Bros Mania. And it was because it was, and I actually believe the industry liked it, because it actually, deep down, the DJs and the programmers and the journalists, I think they enjoyed that rock and roll mania side of what we did.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.
Hatch and Gear. Meet Matt Goss.
Looking back, it must have been quite difficult for Craig, I always thought. I mean, I had a little look at some of the, the pictures from back in the day. And you were always right next to your brother. So it was always you and Luke. And then just kind of out of shot almost. It felt like. Craig, it's almost like a competition winner that just kind of wandered in a little bit.
But oh, my God.
It did. I mean, if you were Craig, you were a little bit like the drummer from Coors. Do you know the Coors? You know, those lovely women.
You're just a sadistic human being, which I quite appreciate. I do appreciate
But I felt a pang of, oh, my God, Craig's life must have been really hard. It's almost like you two were genetically modified. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that was actually one of the stories that came out, that we were genetically modified. All kinds of stuff came out. But Craig was our best mate at school. And it was the only way I can explain what happened is that when we were in the band, he kind of made it less scary, you know, so I've got to give him credit for it, because he was our mate. It's like going down a country lane with a family member. It's a bit scary, but when you got your mate with you, it's exciting. It unfortunately didn't end really well with us. I mean, thankfully, we still remain friends. We don't see each other a lot, but if we did, we're very cordial and we consider ourselves friends. But it was, even that situation was a very tumultuous experience for a young man, because he ended up leaving the band, and actually lawyers were involved. And it was just one of those moments where you just felt like it was an introduction to that side of the industry. And I remember saying to him, look, can't we just talk as mates? And I remember his lawyer leaning over to me saying, please ask all questions to me, please. It was just one of those heartbreaking moments where you just thought, this is we're not a school anymore, and this is real, because I think money and fame changes the dynamic. But I will say truthfully, the incarnation of Bros for me was me and my brother. Yeah. We played Wembley Stadium without Craig, and you know, he did very, very well as a manager, and I'm proud of him. But Bros for me is me and my brother Luke.
Is there any chance, having seen you do the reunion gig a couple of years ago, which sold out in 7 seconds, is there any chance you would do some more?
Yeah, I mean, the O2 shows were so beautiful. I mean, I remember being at Live Nation, the head office in London, with my mate Andy Coppin, and we pressed the go button, and immediately people started saying they couldn't get tickets, and it said, fellas, we sold out. We sold it immediately. It was like, and it's the fastest seller, I think, and we beat Coldplay, and it's one of those moments where we didn't know whether we'd sell 3 tickets, but it was a moment to have my brother on stage again. You know, even though we have a tumultuous relationship and we are much closer now, there's nothing like, as much as I love getting on stage, there's nothing like having your brother on stage, having that feeling when you just look at each other and there's this telepathy. We've seen so much together, me and Luke, and you know, Luke through his acting career, but we've vowed that we'll never leave the band again, and we will definitely, without question, after I'm done with this and Luke's enjoying his painting and he's just really doing so well on that, we're going to do this next year, things that we both have wanted to do artistically, and then we're going to approach possibly doing another documentary with the making of the record, the new record, which is, if you thought we were butting heads on the last one, you should see what's going to happen.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, look, nothing compares to the Gallaghers, does it? So don't worry, you're positively good mates compared to those two. So, listen, we can't not play another fantastic Bros record. And I know it's hard because it's like choosing one of your favourite children, but what's your favourite Bros record?
I think because I can turn this song, as a musician, I can turn this song to pretty much anything, and I turn it into a beautiful soul classic when I do it. Boom, 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 boom. That would be the bass line that we choose for this song. It's just a smashing song, great pop record. It's called I Owe Nothing.
I
SBS Original Music Specials.
Hatch and Gear. Meet Matt Goss.
This is Hatch and Gear, and I'm thrilled to say I've got one of my poster pin-ups with us today. Matt Goss from the boy band Bros is our guest. I mean, like so many teenage girls in the 80s and 90s, you were just absolutely splattered all over my wall.
That's a good choice of words there.
Yeah. So we are going to take advantage now and do a little quick-fire question chat with you. And this is just a load of bonkers questions.
Don't don't overthink it, Matt.
Go with your gut.
I don't overthink anyone. You can say that I don't overthink anything, really.
Okay, let's start with this one. Who's the coolest person you've ever met?
Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones.
Oh, I love that. Who is the prettiest woman that's hit on you?
Oh, my God, bro. I wouldn't say hit on me, but the prettiest woman that actually made me blush immediately, two women, Princess Diana and Madonna.
Oh, wow. What were they like, quickly?
We had lunch with Princess Diana, and I can promise you it was the most beautiful, like, knowingly, like, her eyes were just like sapphires. I'm not being corny, but they just went, looked straight through you, and it was like, you're just like, oh my God, she's a beautiful woman. And Madonna, I met her, she was with Tupac.
Oh my goodness, amazing.
And she gave me a little wink when I got out of the elevator,
like, I'll come back for you.
Well, hold out for
listen,
that.
I'm not going to lie, I would have done it.
I hate to say it, but I think you might be too old for her. She likes some really young.
I know. That is very mean, but true.
Sorry.
And as I like to say, I resemble that remark.
Okay. Best moment in your life?
I would say professionally, Wembley Stadium coming out. It's a sold out gig at Wembley Stadium, and it just stays in your blood as a musician. It was an incredible, incredible moment.
Okay, saddest moment in your life?
Well, without question, losing my dear mother.
If you could change one thing about your looks and body, what would it be?
Looking at you, I'd just try and somewhere tell the surgeon to give me that hairline, those cheekbones, that nose. I'll just really ask the surgeon just to you know, replicate your look.
How many houses do you own?
Two.
Do you support a football team?
My team is my granddad's team, and it is Millwall.
Do you have any niche, weird hobbies or interests?
I love to collect watches. I'm a watch collector, and I love to draw.
And do you have any military connections?
I am an honorary captain in the American Army.
Wow.
And, yep, I've done a lot of stuff in support of the troops. And they're very, very dear to me. So thank you for your service, everybody listening.
Most expensive present you've ever bought someone?
It's a car, an Aston Martin.
Who was that for?
My ex-fiance.
Wow.
Did you get it back after?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, damn it.
Biggest regret in your life?
Can this be heavy or not?
Yeah, yeah, it could be anything.
Okay. I think the biggest regret in my life, honestly, not to be too heavy, but I don't think I had the courage to accept that my mum was passing, and I just tried every single day to keep her alive, and I didn't ask the questions that I should have done about her favourite colour and her favourite band and her favourite food, and just so I could take those things with me. I think the biggest regret that I wasn't brave enough to accept that moment and just accept it and just ask some very poignant questions and just know her better than I thought. I knew her very well. She's my best friend, but I think that's the biggest regret in my life, even to this day.
Bless you.
In the documentary, I noticed that you said that you felt like you became a man the day that your mother died. And I was just absolutely bawling because I just think so many people can relate to that. So thank you for being so honest.
Grief is a very strange thing. It's a continuous thing, but you learn to live with it. But I am happy to say that I'm leaning more towards that. I want to find the joy in that because, ironically, I am connected to the pain rather than because I'm afraid that will let her go. So I'm trying to, genuinely working on just trying to connect to the joy that I know that she would want me to feel.
That does come, you know, with grief. It's visceral to start with, but then later on you remember the good stuff. The bad stuff goes, I think, in my experience. Right, here's another silly one for you. You can have a superpower. What would it be?
I would say I would want to be able to travel back in time, bump off Hitler, and buy a couple of old Aston Martins and Daytona watches so I could resell them.
And you meet Donald Trump in a lift. What would you say to him?
I actually met Donald Trump many times. I played at Mar-a-Lago as in a charity event. I would just say, slightly less spray tan, my friend.
Good one. Nice one. Okay, right. Lastly, and this is what we want, the song you wish you'd written and recorded, because we'll stick it on.
Beautiful question. I think Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles.
Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
And Gear. Meet Matt Goss.
BFBS. The Forces Station.
This is Hatch and Gear. We're all across the Forces world with Matt Goss, who's generally regarded as the most talented member of BROS. And I can say that because Luke isn't here to argue. Now, the new album is finished. Tell us about what it's all about and why you wanted to make it and why you wanted to return to pop music.
The album, first of all, is called The Beautiful Unknown. And I believe in some ways we've had this inherent fear installed within us, certainly during COVID and during this time. We have this kind of dread of tomorrow or the coming week or year. And I think that all of my bad decisions in my life have been made from a place of fear. One of my tattoos on my wrist simply says fearless, because, you know, I boxed for 22 years. I like to have explosive strength, and I feel like there's an instinct to me. There's an instinctual necessity to the way I live my life. And to everybody listening in the Forces, nobody listening to this will react from a place of fear. They act from instinct and an understanding of what they have to do. And I believe that I wanted to make a record that was honest and had a snapshot of my life, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly, but I wanted to lift people up even within twisted love songs. And I wanted to create an album that was extremely commercial, but in a way that had an intelligence to it. So I wanted to write a record really called The Beautiful Unknown to encourage people to come along this journey, that let's lift our mates up. Let's believe that tomorrow and the weeks and years to come are going to be good, and not something to be fearful of. So that's really why I wanted to write a record called The Beautiful Unknown.
I wanted to watch your video, The Beautiful Unknown, and for some reason I couldn't get any sound on the telly. So I watched the whole of your video without hearing the song for the first time. Oh my God, you kept my attention. The video is amazing. I mean, what's it been like to go back to making videos again?
Well, I think that it's, thank you so much. I'm really proud of the first video, which is called Somewhere to Fall. That was the first single. And it was, Somewhere to Fall is really about finding that place, whether it's one of your best mates, whether it's your partner. For me, in particular, it's my friends have become my family. But in London, when I go back to London, I love going to St. James Park. I'm a royalist and I love being by Buckingham Palace. And the last park that me and my mother walked in was in St. James. And there's this park that we used to sit, and I still do it. I don't really feel like I'm in London until I sit in that park in St. James Park and feed the squirrels and the birds. And I just feel connected back to my country. The video is very, very, nobody's actually got all of the symbolism and symbology within the video. There are some pretty arty kind of video, but every single moment in that video represents something quite intense, and nobody yet has got every meaning of that. They think there is a soldier. There is a soldier in an oversized uniform in that. And that actually does not represent my granddad. Although my granddad was a gunner in the Second World War and was a proud military man, that does not represent my grandfather. But it would be interesting when you do watch that video if you can kind of decipher it, because it was very purposeful. I wrote it, co-directed it. And to the last part of your question is that I just want to bring back, hopefully, where artists actually do make videos. I know it's not about MTV anymore, but it really is an extension of the song and what goes into the imagery of when you write it. And I'm pleased to say it does have an Aston Martin in it. So for the fellas, it does have an Aston Martin in it. So.
Excellent. Can you have a favourite song on the album? Do you have a favourite song on the album?
I think the title track, The Beautiful Unknown, is one of my favourite songs because of, lyrically, it's a story. It's influenced by Billy Joel, but it's still got a commercial beat and stuff. Lyrically, it's a great story. But I think one of my favourite songs is called Saved. I actually haven't told anybody that, but it is one of my favourites because it's a much more soulful track. And then I would say one that might not be a single is called Soldiers of War. And that song is really about how relationships can crumble and you become soldiers of war and not protectors of love. It's one of my favorites musically because it's just very, very personal, and I remember how I wrote it. And so the album's full of great songs, and I can't wait for people to hear it.
Just before you go, I just wondered, now you're back in the pop game, is there anybody you'd like to collaborate with?
Yeah, I'd love to do a duet with Adele. I think that it's been a long time since there's been a real classic bona fide duet since really George Michael and Aretha Franklin. I just would love to. I've never done a duet, and that's something that I would love to do.
Okay, well, let's stick on the first song that you're releasing as your single. So will you just introduce it for us?
First of all, everybody listening, I truly mean this from the deepest place. Anybody that runs towards danger to keep our freedom and keep us safe, and certainly knowingly run towards danger, I can't tell you how humbled I am by your bravery and your service. So thank you for your service. I send you nothing but love. This song is called Somewhere to Fall.
Literally changed the shape of me. I fell on my knees and I was so mad. I was so angry, lost and sad. But flowers will grow towards the light. It does not mean you ain't got to fight. I will be strong, a mother's son. Gotta let go, let go.
you're alone. Yeah, I need somewhere to fall. I've gotta let go.
BS Original Music Specials.
On air, online, on the app,
on FM,
and DAB Plus throughout the UK. This is BFBS.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.